Welcome, everybody, to the Boca in English podcast. This is your host, Gabriel Aguero. And today is going to be a solo podcast, unfortunately. But I'm here to recap Boca's 2-0 win against Newell's in match day 2 of the Liga Profesional. After that, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about the transfer market, Paul Fernandez' situation with the club, and the possible return of Cristian Pavón to Boca. There's a lot of conflicting reports with that as well, but hopefully I can clear the air a little bit for you guys. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and dive into what was a very impressive win for Boca in Rosario, the first time Boca defeats Newell's in their home in, I believe it was 9 years, if I'm not mistaken. So Boca lined up with Andrada in goal, Bufarini, Lopez, Izquierdos, Frank Fabra. In the middle of the field, we had Campuzano and Capaldo. A little bit up top, we had Salvio Cardona, Villa, and as the lone striker, Carlos Tevez. And this was, I wouldn't say controversial, but a lot of people have been wanting to see Carlos Tevez up top with Cardona behind him, without Soldano, without Zárate, without Avila. Carlos Tevez as the number 9, the lone striker. Again, with Cardona behind him. And a lot of people wanted to test it out to see how it would work. We have Internacional in, I believe, is it next week? I'm not too sure when we host or when we visit Internacional, I should say. Wednesday, November 25th. So just under, in about 12 days, 11, 12 days around there. Boca visit Internacional. So this is seen, this match against Newell's was seen as the last test Miguel Ángel Russo had to face what most would consider a pretty tough opponent in Newell's, but the last test in that we have all our players. After the match against Newell's, Boca lost the Campuzano, Fabra, and Cardona to Colombia. Andrada went over to Argentina for international duty, and I believe that's it. Zambrano was handed a 3-game suspension for Peru, so he was not called up for this international break. We lost 4 players. So, again, this was seen as the last big test for Boca, the last time Miguel Ángel Russo could really test anything out, having all the players at his disposal. So, in a first half against Newell's that was mostly controlled by the home side, in terms of possession, but not really threatening, I would say over the course of 90 minutes, it was mostly catching practice for Esteban Andrada. Newell's really didn't threaten at all in terms of shots on goal and realistic goal-scoring opportunities. They did have a huge chunk of possession in the first half, but that did change a lot in the second half. Carlos Tevez played absolutely fantastic. In my opinion, he was the man of the match. Within the first couple of minutes, I think within the first 5 minutes, he had a header, and the Newell's keeper, Aguirre, had a tremendous save. It was a really good cross from Bufarini. Davis connects with the ball, and very unlucky for it not to go in. Again, the goalkeeper did a fantastic job to save that. A little bit after, I'm just going over the highlights right now. A little bit after that, I don't remember which Newell's player it was, but sent in a fairly low cross into the box. It hits Campuzano's thigh and then bounces and hits his arm. And the entire Newell's bench shouted for a penalty. In my opinion, if the penalty was given, it would have been really, really harsh, because there's no way to Campuzano to predict that the ball is going to hit his arm after it touches his thigh. I mean, this is within seconds. There's no way any player would be able to predict that and get his arm out of the way. Now, the ball went straight and hit his arm. It's definitely a penalty. The new rule says that any handball in the box is a penalty. But this one, in my opinion, would have been really, really harsh if it was given. Kudelka was, the Newell's coach, was really adamant about this specific play post-match. He really wanted the penalty given. I think the right call was given. I really don't think it was a penalty. Had VAR been there, though, it might have been given. Again, I do think it would have been really harsh, because it hits Campuzano's thigh and then hits his arm. It would have been really, really tough to give that. But I think overall, Campuzano really he did well over the course of the match. I think so. Leading up to Boca's first goal, Campuzano was the one to press Pablo Perez and Pablo Perez blatantly gives the ball away to Salvio, who drives in and filters a ball through the Newell's defense to Tevez, who rounds the keeper and gets the first of the night for Boca. Boca lead within 20 minutes in a game that I'm not sure, at that point in time, I'm not sure they really deserve the lead. Again, Newell's was dominating most of the first half, if not all of the first half. Again, mostly with possession. They didn't threaten too much in front of goal, but Boca has these players, these sort of players where, you know, they could change the match for you, even if the team really doesn't deserve it. And Boca almost got a second a couple minutes later, another Newell's, this time it was their number two, I'm not sure who that was, but the Newell's player gives the ball away to Cardona. Cardona gives a lob pass over to Tevez, who goes at the ball one-on-one with the goalkeeper Aguirre. Unfortunately, that play ended up bad. Aguirre ended up dislocating his arm. There's a couple of media outlets who were going at Tevez for this post-match. Again, I think that's unfair to say that Tevez is at fault for the goalkeeper dislocating his arm. It was a 50-50 ball. The goalkeeper went for it. Tevez went for it. Tevez, I think, touched the ball with his cleats at the same time that Aguirre touched the ball with his arm, and that caused the dislocation. It wasn't any malice with that, in my opinion. So they had to substitute their goalkeeper. And that was towards the end of the first half. Now, going into the second half, things changed quite a bit for Boca. The tempo from Newell's really went down quite a bit. One player I do want to mention is Frank Fabra, once again joining in on attack constantly. He got a really good opportunity on goal, sort of chipping the ball, and the goalkeeper gets a touch on it and just sends it over the crossbar. And for most of the second half, we saw a lot of runs from Villa, who made his first start for Boca since March. Here I'm watching a play where Tevez does well to find Villa. Villa makes a great run, and then the goalkeeper does well to block Villa's shot. This specific case, Villa could have passed the ball over to Salvio, but he didn't. He went one-on-one with the keeper, which is fine too. Another opportunity later, another great run from Sebastian Villa, who this time does pass it to Salvio. Salvio gets in at the Newell's defense, goes around one or two players, and just kicks the ball to the left of the post. He did very, very well to get there. He probably should have scored that. He was only, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 feet out. And then later on in the second half, Boca earn a corner kick. Licha Lopez does well to connect to it, and the ball ended up going in. Tevez, a lot of people thought Tevez got the goal. I thought Tevez got the goal. The commentator said that Tevez got the goal. But when you look at the replay, Tevez actually doesn't get a touch on it. And in fact, he tells Lisandro Lopez, "That's your goal. I didn't get a touch on it." But Tevez did well to be in that situation and distract the goalkeeper from seeing the trajectory of the ball. That ball could have been saved. It bounces and then goes in. The goalkeeper really could have saved that, but he was distracted by Tevez. So an overall good game from Boca. Here I'm watching a play towards the final minutes. Gabaldo in the box does well to sort of put the ball to his right foot. And as he's getting ready to kick, Tevez comes up from behind him and actually takes the shot, and it hits the post. I think Tevez was in a better position to take that shot. A lot of people were debating this play after the game. Some people think that Gabaldo should have taken the shot. Tevez shouldn't have taken the ball from him. But I think Tevez was in better position, and he hits the post. Unfortunately, the ball doesn't go in. But a very, very, very good second half from Boca as a whole. I really liked how Miguel, I don't know if Miguel Russo really said anything at halftime to, you know, change the team's mentality, but for most of the first half, Newell's were completely running over us. Again, not being threatening, not getting any shots on goal for the most part, or really anything to make Andrada work for. But they did have a large share of possession, and for a couple of minutes, they did pin us into our own half. So Boca did very, very well in the second half, and ended up winning 2-0, very important scoreline in Rosario against a tough Newell's side. It's always tough to go there, like I said before. Again, first win for Boca at Newell's in 9 years, I believe. So Miguel Ángel Russo's streak continues of very good form since he's taken over the club in January. So just looking at the standings really, really quick, we have in zone four at the end of match day two, we have Boca in first place with 6 points, Talleres in second place with 4 points, Lanús in third with 1 point, and Newell's in last place with 0 points. On Monday night, Talleres and Lanús played. Lanús was winning 1-0, and Talleres ended up scoring in the dying minutes of the game. The game ended 1-1, so they split points there. Positive result for Boca. This Sunday, Boca hosts Talleres in La Bombonera without a couple of key players, so we're going to see a mixed lineup. Now, if I'm taking a guess at what the lineup could be like, from what I've heard, there's going to be a couple of obvious changes, one of them being Rossi for Andrada, who's an international duty, and Manuel Mas replacing Fabra, also an international duty. Diego Pulpo Gonzalez is going to make his debut in the starting lineup. He did play against Lanús, if I'm not mistaken, but he's going to start replacing Campuzano, who won't be there. Maroni's actually going to get the start as well, according to a lot of reports, replacing Cardona, who's another one in international duty. As far as the lineup itself goes, there isn't much clarity on that. There isn't much certainty on that. Bufarini is probably going to play. Gapaldo is going to play. Tevez most likely going to play. Over on the right wing, we do have Salvio injured out for about 20 days. He will miss. He's likely to miss the first leg against Inter in the round of 16 of the Copa Libertadores. So we have to find a replacement on that side. Maybe Villa could switch over to the right, or maybe Saturday could play on that side, or maybe Saturday could play in front of Tevez as the lone striker over Soldano or Avila. So there's a couple of key positions that Miguel Angel Russo will have to figure out in order to construct his 11 for Sunday's match against Talleres. So that's that in terms of the Copa Liga Profesional. Again, this is going to be a very quick, short podcast because it's just me, myself, and I for this one. So in terms of the transfer market, Paul Fernandez. So in order to clear his situation up, when he signed with Boca back in January, it was only for a one-year loan from Cruz Azul. Paul Fernandez at the time was not going through his best was not in his best form. In fact, I don't think he was getting any playing time at Cruz Azul. So Boca gave him this opportunity to go ahead and bounce back. Let's not forget, Paul Fernandez won a championship with Racing. He had a spell with Godoy Cruz where he played some fantastic football. So Boca gave him this chance. And I think overall, taking a look at this year, he has been a very important part of Miguel Angel Russo's system. He has played exceptionally well. And Boca had, according to reports, all negotiations cleared and completed with Cruz Azul in order to extend that loan for another year, including the contract with Paul Fernandez. That was also agreed on as well. But according to some reports, he has received an offer from a European club that is not known yet. A lot of people speculate that it's Celta de Vigo, where Internacional's coach Eduardo Caudet ended up departing for. He will now coach Celta de Vigo, so Inter have a little situation that they have to figure out, or that they have already figured out. I think they've already found a replacement. But anyways, Eduardo Caudet coached Paul Fernandez at Racing, so according to a lot of reports, he wants to take Paul Fernandez to Celta de Vigo. Keeping this in mind, you know, with the economic situation in Argentina, this is a really good opportunity for Paul, who is, if I'm not mistaken, is 29 years old. Is a good opportunity for him to earn in euros, which I think every player currently in Argentina wants to take advantage of whenever they can, especially at that age. He's 29, he's entering his 30s soon, and just now he has the opportunity to play in Europe and earn in euros. Obviously, in terms of clubs, there's no comparison between Boca Juniors and in Celta de Vigo. Boca is by far the superior team. Much more recognized worldwide, much more accolades worldwide. I'm not even going to get into that. But in terms of it, economically, Celta de Vigo is the better destination for Paul. It's really unfortunate. And a lot of people were comparing his situation to Junior Alonso's. Me, personally, I don't think it's the same. because Junior Alonso on multiple occasions did express how he wanted to continue with Boca and stay at Boca, and he used his family as an excuse in order to leave and then sign in Brazil. We all know how that turned out, how that situation went. Listened to a couple of podcasts ago, I would say good 9-10 episodes ago, where we clear up Junior Alonso's situation. This is different. Paul Fernandez never, as they say in Argentina, vendió humo. He never sold smoke on the air. He never said, you know, Boca's his life. He wants to live at this club. He's obviously a fan. He's thankful for the club. He's an academy product of Boca Juniors. But he's been fairly quiet in the media over the past year. He never said that he wanted to continue yes or yes with Boca. So he's taking advantage of whatever opportunity is presented to him. And I feel like as a whole, it's respectable. It's obviously not a good thing for us because it's in the middle of a Copa Libertadores campaign. And now Miguel Ángel Russo has a huge task of not only replacing him, but sort of getting the same function out of the team that we had with Paul Fernandez inside. So that's that with Paul. Last topic I want to touch on is Cristian Pavón. His loan with LA Galaxy expires, as we all know, on December 31st of this year. LA Galaxy did not make the MLS playoffs, so a lot of journalists were speculating with the fact that he could return to Boca earlier and take part in the Copa Libertadores. From what I've heard yesterday in the past few days, that's not the case. Right now, he is on a 10-day vacation, mandatory from FIFA, mandated by FIFA that he has to take. So he's on that 10-day vacation. And then after that, we'll see. His buyout clause is $20 million, and this was agreed upon 18 months ago. This is something that a lot of Galaxy fans don't seem to understand. This clause was agreed upon 18 months ago, pre-pandemic, a totally different situation for all clubs in the world. But that doesn't mean that's the only way LA Galaxy can retain Cristian Pavón. Recent reports suggest that Boca would be fine with an offer of around $10 million. If you take a look at the economic situation now in Argentina, $10 million transferred over to Argentine pesos is the same thing as $20 million 18 months ago. Boca, in terms of pesos, is making the same amount of money as if they were to receive $20 million 18 months ago. Again, obviously, if Boca were to receive $20 million now, it's obviously a lot more money in pesos, but the devaluation of the Argentine peso makes it that $10 million is the same as the $20 million that Boca would have received 18 months ago, you know, if they would have triggered that buy option immediately, which obviously they didn't and wouldn't have. But I'm just trying to compare here in terms of numbers. That's why Boca are okay with receiving $10 million. Me personally, I would be fine with that. I think, and as I've said on Twitter plenty of times, I think this is a win-win situation for Boca. You have an injection of $10 million for the club that they can now use to replace Paul Fernandez or maybe bring in a player in a couple of other key spots. Or you bring back Cristian Pavón, a player who definitely excelled in the MLS and is a good player to have available for you as the Copa Libertadores progresses, and hopefully we continue to progress through the stages. He's a good alternative, good backup to Salvio or Sebastian Villa, or maybe he could take either one of those positions, most likely Villa rather than Salvio. So he's a good backup to have, a very, very solid backup. His agent went live on a couple of TV networks and radio stations saying that if he had to return, Cristian Pavón would be happy to do so. But in terms of an economic situation, he wouldn't like earning what he would earn at Boca currently compared to what he was getting paid at LA Galaxy. Obviously, in the MLS, he's going to be paid significantly more money than he would be paid at Boca. So that's a big thing to keep in mind. I really, if you ask me how this thing ultimately turns out, I have no idea. There are ongoing talks between LA Galaxy and Boca Juniors. I believe one of the board members of the Galaxy have actually confirmed. Cristian Pavón's agent said that he knows absolutely nothing about the ongoing negotiations. He doesn't know what the numbers are like, what they're discussing. So I have no idea how this could end up. I personally think, if I had to put money on it, I don't think Christian Bauen returns to Boca. There's a lot of factors that we have to keep in mind, and of course the pandemic is a huge, huge factor in this. So I don't think he returns to Boca. I think that maybe another club makes a move for him. I'm not too sure if LA Galaxy are going to be able to retain him. In a normal world, I'm sure we would receive offers from mid to low table clubs in Europe's biggest leagues, such as Spain, Italy. I don't think England, maybe France. In a normal world, again, this is a pandemic world where a lot of factors, unfortunately, aren't the same. So if I really did have to put money on it, I don't think he returns to Boca, but I'm not too sure he'll return to Galaxy. So who knows? A report from Tato Villera yesterday actually said that he has to return within to Boca Juniors within the first few days of January 2021. If there isn't an agreement already between the LA Galaxy and Boca Juniors. So that is it, my friends, for this podcast. We're about 20-something minutes in. That's all I have for you. We recapped the match against Newell's. We did a little bit of transfer window talk on Paul Fernandez, who's leaving the club, and Cristian Pavon, who could perhaps return in 2021. This Sunday, November 15, Boca host Talleres for match day 4 of the Copa Liga Profesional. A week after that, actually 5 days after that, on Friday, November 20th, I believe, Boca hosts Lanús. Yes, we have two back-to-back home games. Boca hosts Lanús in match day... what is that? Match day... I believe that's match day 5. Yes, match day 5 of the Copa Liga Profesional. Expect a lot of substitutes or second-string players against Lanús, because a couple of days later, on Wednesday, November 25th, is the first leg of the Copa Libertadores for Boca against Internacional in Brazil at 7:30. There's a lot of speculation about that game, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But that's all for today, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time.